I would like to turn your attention to John chapter 9, verses 1 through 41, to talk about a blind man who could see. I know that's a long reading, but I hope you'll bear with me as we read it in introduction to our lesson. Jesus passed by and he saw a certain man who was blind from birth. His disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but the works of God should be manifest, revealed in me. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is today. The night is coming when no one can work." Now, I wondered why we just had that reading. Okay. "As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." And when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with clay. He said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Therefore the neighbors and those who previously had seen the blind man, or seen that he was blind, said, "Is this not he who sat and begged?" Some said, "That this is he." And others says, "Well, he's like him." He said, "I am he." Therefore they said to him, "How were your eyes opened?" And he said, "A man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed and I received sight." Then they said to him, "Where is he?" And he said, "I don't know." They brought him, who formerly was blind, to the Pharisees. Now it was on the Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also asked him again, how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I can see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." Others said, "How can a man who's a sinner do such signs?" Then there was division among them, and they said to the blind man again, "Why do you say about him, 'He opened my eyes'?" And he said, "He is a prophet." But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked him, saying, "Is this your son who was born blind? How then does he now see?" And his parents answered and said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind," excuse me, "but by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him. He will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews. The Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, "Give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner." He answered and said, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see." And they said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And he answered them, "I told you already and you didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he's from." The man answered and said unto him, "Why, this is a marvelous thing. You do not know where he's from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered and said to him, "You were completely born in sins, and are you a teaching us?" And they cast him out. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?"
He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and this he who's talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into the world, that those who do not see may see, that those who see may be made blind." So then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see.' Therefore, your sin remains." That's an exciting account. An exciting account. And certainly one worth reading. But notice this. Sight allows one to perceive things, that is, to perceive physical things, as well as spiritual things. It is sometimes the case that those who can see physically cannot see spiritually. And Jesus talked about people of this nature in Matthew 13, 14, and 15. He says, "And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand. Seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of these people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them.'" In John chapter 9, the blind man was able to see far better and far more clearly than those who actually had sight prior to him receiving his sight. He saw spiritually and he saw physically. But let's examine this passage and make some applications. The first thing that strikes me as important here is that not all suffering is a result of sin. There's an old Iranian folk proverb which says, "If you see a blind man, kick him. Why should you be kinder than God?" That's pretty interesting. But commonly, people have the notion, and in many cultures this is true, that illness and injury and other forms of tragedy are always divine justice against people. Always. The old saying quoted above would have people believe that suffering is God's will, and sufferers just deserve it. That's all. In John 9, 1 through 3, we find that this man who was blind from birth asked his disciples, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned?" And Jesus says, "Neither one. His parents didn't sin, and he didn't sin." Now, the disciples evidently thought that suffering was directly related to sin. And in this case, it would have been the parent's sin that was visited on the son. But you know somebody in the Bible that we look to find out the truth about this? A fellow named Job. Yeah. In Job chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, "Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen those who plow iniquity sow trouble and reap the same." In other words, each person is going to reap their harvest, whatever it is. It's not a matter of sin that causes someone to be sick. And of course, Job could relate to that because he was being oppressed, but not because of sin. Not because of sin. Jesus said this situation was not because of sin. But could a good God, a really righteous God, use a person in this way? Well, we need to ascertain what is truly good and evil. Can we declare that what brings one closer to God is evil? Think about that. Who would dare to say that this man's blindness was evil? and it brought him closer to God and ultimately the remission of sins. That we're not saying this. Not all suffering is evil, though. Psalm 119, verses 71 says, "It is good for me that I have been afflicted." What? What did David say? "It's good for me that I've been afflicted, that I might learn your statutes." David saw some good in suffering. And so we can't look at this, all of these things that happen to people, as being evil necessarily. Because certainly good can come from it. And in this case, the blind man, his receiving his sight was an opportunity that was presented to glorify the Lord, bring glory and honor to his name. And is that evil? No, not at all. But something else that we notice here, not all prayers are answered. That is, affirmatively. In John 9:31, the statement is made, "We know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him." Now, there are many, and even some amongst us, I guess, who take the position that this cannot be authoritative because it was not spoken by an inspired man. It's just some fellow that was there and he was blind, sitting there begging. So how can you take this as authoritative, that God does not hear sinners? Well, there are several things that strike me about that. One thing was that he made this statement to the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were the lawyers, if you will, who knew the law. And if he made a statement like this and it was not true, they would have said something about it right then. Stopped him right there. But they didn't stop him. They didn't stop him. Why didn't they? Well, it's possible then that they thought it was true. Well, how can we know if it is true? Well, we can know what was said as truth by comparing it to other inspired teaching. The same passages that the disciples declaring that this man was handicapped because of sins, and we can see Jesus, of course, in that particular situation correcting their error, but the Pharisees declared that Jesus sinned by breaking the Sabbath. We can not help but notice that neither the Pharisees nor the Holy Spirit caused any kind of correction in this man's statement. Why not? Well, look at Psalm 34, verses 15 and 16. "The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth." Kind of sounds like God doesn't hear sinners, doesn't it? But we turn on down and we look in Psalm 66 and verse 18. "If I regard iniquity in my heart, the Lord will not hear." Now, what part of that don't you understand? That's pretty plain. And then in Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 29, "The Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayers of the righteous." So when this blind man said, "We know that God does not hear sinners," he knew what he was talking about. He was speaking the truth. Now, I want you to notice that there, on this occasion, were three differing attitudes toward Christ that were present. First of all, there was the Pharisees. They saw and heard the testimony of the miracle and refused to accept it. Why? Because accepting it meant accepting him as Christ. That's why. Their minds were closed, and they cast the man out of the synagogue and accused Christ of being a sinner. How many are willing to weigh evidence contrary to an unaccepted belief? How many are willing to change if they are shown to be wrong? Those are two questions we need to ponder. Need to ponder that. How many of us are willing to ponder the evidence, to weigh it carefully, to something that is an unaccepted belief? Do you know, I've made it a practice that every time before I go to study with someone, I take into consideration what their background is. Now, they may be the Baptist background, let's say. I look up various aspects of what they believe, and then I look at the scriptures and see if the scriptures support it. If they don't, well, here's why the scriptures don't support it. Then I know that I can have an intelligent discussion with this person. I had a problem, though. I had a discussion with someone from Calvary Chapel, and I dug and dug trying to find information on that, and I didn't find it readily. But I just did everything I could to get ready. And what it ended up was, I ended up preaching the gospel to him out of Acts. So that's the best I could do. And I caused him to pause and think a little bit, but didn't cause him to come to the truth yet. Anyway, how many people that you take this to are willing to change if they're shown to be wrong? That's a problem. And we could be just as guilty of it. Just as guilty. We've got to be willing to accept the possibility that we have been mistaken about something. And when shown the truth on it, readily accept it, repent, and press on in the correct direction. If not, we are in danger. We are in danger. Then there's a class of people that's represented by the blind man's parents. The blind man's parents, notice, they asked him, "Is this your son? And is born blind? And how now does he see?" And they said, "We don't know. This is our son. And he was born blind. But we don't know anything about it. Don't know anything about it. He's of age. Ask him." They wanted to remain neutral. And notice the reason. They were afraid of the consequences of getting involved with Jesus. They had seen what happened to other people that got involved with this Jesus fella. And they didn't want any part of it. Because, first of all, they knew they'd be thrown out of the synagogue. And that was just about worse, a fate worse than death. Some today who are, shall I say, nominal Christians or barely Christians have no intention of getting really involved. The slightest little thing comes up and they're on their way because they don't want to get involved. Don't want to get involved. Then there is a class that is represented by the blind man. The blind man shared with others what Jesus had done for him. Did you notice this? A man called Jesus made clay. He anointed my eyes and said, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam." I went and washed. I received my sight. That's big news, man. That's big news. He boldly affirmed that Jesus was a prophet. That's right. He was a prophet. He was not afraid of what others thought of him. And he's not afraid of what others would maybe do to him. He simply stated the truth. In John chapter 9, 30 through 35, notice here that the man answered and said to them, "Why, this marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he's opened my eyes." Now, hey, look at this fella. He says, "Isn't it amazing that you Pharisees are really the keepers of the law and the men of knowledge of the law? And you don't know where he came from?" I mean, he says, "I just can't get over that. Yet he opened my eyes. You don't know where he came from. He's opened my eyes." Now, that's when he got into the statement about prayer. And we know God doesn't hear sinners. But God, he says, heard this man. That's what the point of this is. In his argument here to them, he says, all of you are not taking into consideration that since time has begun, that God hasn't done anything like this. Yeah. It's not an everyday occurrence. Now, they answered and said to him, "You were completely born in sins." Kind of makes me think that the Pharisees were a little bit Calvinistic here. Just a little bit Calvinistic. Born in sin. But that's all they could say. What else could they do? What else could they do? This man has pinned them up against the wall because everything that he said was true. This man has shown the signs of a prophet. This man has shown that he has the power of God. This man has shown that God hears him. And you don't know where he came from? That's a problem. That's a problem. But they said, "You were born in sins, and are you teaching us?" You don't teach the Pharisees. You don't teach them. You just listen to him and you learn. But he is teaching them a lesson. He's teaching them a lesson. What else could they do? They cast him out. That's all they could do. And the word got to Jesus that they had cast him out. And Jesus found him. And it's right. You think this is the right thing for Jesus to do. Now, I don't know if you thought of this or not, but when Jesus healed this man, he didn't see Jesus because he was blind. He was blind. And he covered up his eyes even more with spittle and clay. And he went with that on his eyes to the pool of Siloam, and he still hadn't seen Jesus. Still hadn't seen him. And he suddenly could see, and he still didn't see Jesus. All of this time, he had not seen Jesus. Now, Jesus finds him. And he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" Well, what else could he do? This is the man who had given him eyesight. First time in his life, eyesight. And now he's looking at him face to face. Isn't that interesting to think about that? That's quite a story. But you know, he suffered for the consequences of his convictions. There's no doubt about it. Without even seeing Jesus, he already had suffered for the consequences of his convictions. But he also rejoiced and enjoyed the blessings and rewards of his convictions too. Now, that brings us to this. Into what class of people do you most naturally fit? Think about it. Do you fit into the class of the Pharisees? Or are you like the blind man's parents? Don't want to get involved. Or you like the blind man? I hope every one of you consider yourself to be in the class of the blind man who could see. You know, old Marshall Keeble was a gospel preacher whenever I was about, I don't know, I wasn't very old. He died whenever I was about 3, I think. 46%. Yeah, he died in 50, so I was 4 years old. But I've heard stories about him. My dad heard him preach. I've read his sermons, and they're just wonderful. But he was preaching on the blind man one time. And he built the whole story up, and he said, you know, he says, someone comes up and says, now, Brother Keeble, he says, that man was blind. And he didn't know what he was saying. He was blind, man. And he said, brother, he says, he was blind, but he could see. And you know what? When you see, you'll see that he spoke the truth. The absolute truth. And that's right. He did. He spoke the absolute truth. You notice I didn't want to develop this point of God doesn't hear the prayers of sinners. Because I figured it was going to take a whole lot of time, and I look up at the clock and I could have developed it, worked it over, but that's the way it goes. The older I get, the less I know how to preach. But anyway,